The Moon is a Harsh Mistress by Robert Heinlein. Continued. Disc 4. Killing is not the way to handle a spy, not when he doesn't know that you know that he is a spy. She blinked. I must be dense. No, dear lady. Instead, you have a charming honesty, a weakness you must guard against. The thing to do with a spy is to let him breathe, insist him with loyal comrades, and feed him harmless information to please his employers. These creatures will be taken into our organization. Don't be shocked. They will be in very special cells. Cages is a better word, but it would be the greatest waste to eliminate them. Not only would each spy be replaced with someone new, but also killing these traitors would tell the warden that we have penetrated his secrets. Mike, amigo mio, there should be in that file a dossier on me. Will you see? There were long notes on Prof, and I was embarrassed as they added up to harmless old fool. He was tagged as a subversive. That was why he had been sent to the Rock, as a member of underground group in Luna City. But was described as a troublemaker in organization, one who rarely agreed with others. Prof dimpled and looked pleased. I must consider trying to sell out and get myself placed on Warden's payroll. Wyo did not think these funny, especially when he made clear was not joke, merely unsure tactic was practical. Revolutions must be financed, dear lady, and one way is for a revolutionary to become a police spy. It is probable that some of those prima facie traitors are actually on our side. I wouldn't trust them. Ah, yes, that is the rub with double agents, to be certain where their loyalties, if any, lie. Do you wish your own dossier, or would you rather hear it in private? Wyo's records showed no surprises. Warden Sphinx had tabbed her years back. But I was surprised that I had a record, too. Routine check made when I was cleared to work in a third complex. Was classed as non-political, and someone had added, not too bright, which was both unkind and true. Or why would I get mixed up in revolution? Prof had Mike stop readout, hours more, leaned back, and looked thoughtful. One thing is clear, he said. The warden knew plenty about Wyoming and myself long ago, but you, Manuel, are not on his blacklist. After last night? Ah, so. Mike, do you have anything in that file entered in the last 24 hours? Nothing. Prof said, Wyoming is right that we cannot stay here forever. Manuel, how many names did you recognize? 6, was it? Did you see any of them last night? No, but might have seen me. More likely they missed you in the crowd. I did not spot you until I came down front, and I've known you since you were a boy. But it is most unlikely that Wyoming traveled from Hong Kong and spoke at the meeting without her activity being known to the warden. He looked at Wyo. Dear lady, could you bring yourself to play the nominal role of an old man's folly? I suppose so. How, Professor? Manuel is probably in the clear. I am not, but from my dossier it seems unlikely that the authorities' Sphinx will bother to pick me up. You, they may wish to question, or even to hold. You are rated as dangerous. It would be wise for you to stay out of sight. This room, I'm thinking of renting it for a period, weeks or even years, you could hide in it. If you do not mind the obvious construction that would be placed on your staying here. Wyo chuckled. Why, you darling, do you think I care what anyone thinks? I'd be delighted to play the role of your bundle baby. And don't be too sure I'd just be playing. Never tease an old dog, he said mildly. He might still have one bite. I may occupy that couch most nights. Manuel, I intend to resume my usual ways, and so should you. While I feel that it will take a busy Cossack to arrest me, I will sleep sounder in this hideaway. But in addition to being a hideout, this room is good for cell meetings. It has a phone. Mike said, Professor, may I offer a suggestion? Certainly, amigo. We want your thoughts. I conclude that the hazards increase with each meeting of our executive cell. But meetings need not be corporal. You can meet, and I can join you, if I am welcome, by phone.
You are always welcome, Comrade Mike. We need you.
However,
Prof looked worried.
I said, Prof, don't worry about anybody listening in. I explained how to place a Sherlock call. Phones are safe if Mike supervises call. Reminds me, you haven't been told how to reach Mike. How, Mike? Prof use my number? Between them, they settled on Mysterious. Mysterious. Prof and Mike shared childlike joy and intrigue for own sake. I suspect Prof enjoyed being rebel long before he worked out his political philosophy. While Mike, how could human freedom matter to him? Revolution was a game that gave him companionship and chance to show off talents. Mike was as conceited a machine as you are ever likely to meet.
But we still need this room, Prof said, reaching into pouch, hauling out thick wad of bills.
I blinked.
Prof, robbed a bank?
Not recently. Perhaps again in the future, if the cause requires it. A rental period of 1 lunar should do as a starter. Will you arrange it, Manuel? The management might be surprised to hear my voice. I came in through a delivery door. I called manager, bargained for dated key. 4 weeks. He asked 900 Hong Kong. I offered 900 authority. He wanted to know how many would use room. I asked if was policy of Raffles to snoop affairs of guests. We settled at 475 Hong Kong. I sent up bills. He sent down 2 dated keys. I gave 1 to Wyo, 1 to Prof. Kept 1 day key, knowing they would not reset lock unless we failed to pay at end of lunar. Earthside, I ran into insolent practice of requiring hotel guests to sign CHOP, even show identification. I asked, what next, food?
I'm not hungry, Manny.
Manuel, you asked us to wait while Mike settled your questions. Let's get back to the basic problem. How are we to cope when we find ourselves facing Terra, David facing Goliath?
Oh, been hoping that would go away. Mike, you really have ideas?
I said I did, man, he answered plaintively. We can throw rocks.
Bug's sake, no time for jokes.
But man, he protested, we can throw rocks at Terra. We will.
8. Took time to get through my skull that Mike was serious, and scheme might work. Then took longer to show Wyo and Prof how second part was true. Yet both parts should have been obvious. Mike reasoned so. What is war? One book defined war as use of force to achieve political result. And force is action of one body on another applied by means of energy. In war, this is done by weapons. Luna had none. But weapons, when Mike examined them as class, turned out to be engines for manipulating energy. And energy, Luna has plenty. Solar flux alone is good for around 1 kilowatt per square meter of surface at lunar noon. Sun power, though cyclic, is effectively unlimited. Hydrogen fusion power is almost as unlimited and cheaper, once ice is mined, magnetic pinch bottle set up. Luna has energy. How to use? But Luna also has energy of position. She sits atop of gravity well, 11 kilometers per second deep, and kept from falling in by curb only 2.5 kilometers per second high. Mike knew that curb. Daily he tossed grain freighters over it, let them slide downhill to Terra. Mike had computed what would happen if a freighter grossing 100 tons, or same mass of rock, falls to Terra, unbraked.
Kinetic energy as it hits is 6.25 times 10 to the 12 joules, over 6 trillion joules. This converts in split second to heat. Explosion.
Big one.
Should have been obvious. Look at Luna. What do you see? Thousands and thousands of craters. Places where somebody got playful throwing rocks.
Wyo said, "Joules don't mean much to me. How does that compare with H-bombs?"
I started to round off in head. "Mike's head works faster," he answered.
"The concussion of 100-ton mass on Terra approaches the yield of a 2-kiloton atomic bomb."
"Kilo is 1,000, Wyo murmured. "And mega is 1,000,000. Why, that's only 1/50,000th as much as a 100-megaton bomb. Wasn't that the size Soviet Union used?"
"Wyo, honey," I said gently, "that's not how it works. Turn it around. 2-kiloton yield is equivalent to exploding 2,000,000 kilograms of trinitrotoluol. And a kilo of TNT is quite an explosion. Ask a drill man. 2,000,000 kilos will wipe out good-sized town. Check, Mike?"
"Yes, man. But Wyo, my only female friend, there is another aspect. Multi-megaton fusion bombs are insufficient. The explosion takes place in too small a space. Most of it is wasted. While a 100-ton megaton bomb is rated as having 50,000 times the yield of a 2-kiloton bomb, its destructive effect is only about 1,300 times as great as that of a 2-kiloton explosion."
"But it seems to me that 1,300 times is still quite a lot if they are going to use bombs on us that much bigger."
"True, Wyo, my female friend. But Luna has many rocks."
"Oh, yes, so we have."
"Comrades," said Prof, "this is outside my competence. In my younger, or bomb-throwing, days, my experience was limited to something of the order of the 1-kilogram chemical explosion of which you spoke, Manuel. But I assume that you two know what you are talking about."
"We do,"
Mike agreed.
"So I accept your figures. To bring it down to a scale that I could understand, this plan requires that we capture the catapult. No?"
"Yes,"
Mike and I chorused.
"Not impossible. Then we must hold it and keep it operative. Mike, have you considered how your catapult can be protected against, let us say, one small H-tipped torpedo?"
Discussion went on and on. We stopped to eat. Stopped the business under Prof's rule. Instead, Mike told jokes. Each produced a "that reminds me" from Prof. By time we left Raffles Hotel evening of 14th May, 75, Mike had, with help from Prof, outlined plan of revolution, including major options at critical points. When came time to go, me to home and Prof to evening class, if not arrested, then home for bath and clothes and necessities in case he returned that night, became clear Wyo did not want to be alone in strange hotel.
Wyo was stout when bets were down, between times, soft and vulnerable.
So I called Mom on a Sherlock and told her was bringing house guest home. Mom ran her job with style. Any spouse could bring guest home for meal or year, and our second generation was almost as free, but must ask.
Don't know how other families work. We have customs firmed by a century. They suit us.
So Mom didn't ask name, age, sex, marital condition. Was my right, and she too proud to ask. All she said was,
"That's nice, dear. Have you two had dinner? It's Tuesday, you know."
Tuesday was to remind me that our family had eaten early because Greg preaches Tuesday evenings. But if guest had not eaten, dinner would be served. Concession to guest, not to me. As with exception of Grandpa, we ate when was on table, or scrounged standing up in pantry. I assured her we had eaten and would make tall effort to be there before she needed to leave. Despite loony mixture of Muslims, Jews, Christians, Buddhists, and 99 other flavors, I suppose Sunday is communist day for church. But Greg belongs to sect that had calculated that sundown Tuesday to sundown Wednesday
local time Garden of Eden, Zone minus 2, Terra, was the Sabbath. So we ate early in Terran Northern Hemisphere summer months. Mom always went to hear Greg preach, so it was not considerate to place duty on her that would clash. All of us went occasionally. I managed several times a year because terribly fond of Greg, who taught me one trade and helped me switch to another when I had to, and would gladly have made it his arm rather than mine. But Mom always went, ritual not religion, for she admitted to me one night in pillow talk that she had no religion with a brand on it, then cautioned me not to tell Greg. I exacted same caution from her. I don't know who is cranking. I'm pleased he doesn't stop. But Greg was Mom's boy husband, opted when she was very young, first wedding after her own, very sentimental about him, would deny fiercely if accused of loving him more than other husbands, yet took his faith when he was ordained and never missed a Tuesday. She said, "Is it possible that your guest would wish to attend church?" I said we'd see, but anyhow we would rush, and said goodbye. Then banged on bathroom door and said, "Hurry with skin, Lyle. We're short on minutes." "1 minute," she called out. She's an girlish girl. She appeared in 1 minute. "How do I look?" she asked. "Prof, will I pass?" "Dear Wyoming, I am amazed. You were beautiful before, you are beautiful now, but utterly unrecognizable. You're safe, and I am relieved." Then we waited for Prof to transform into old derelict. He would be it to his back corridor, then reappear as well-known teacher in front of class, to have witnesses in case a yellow boy was waiting to grab him. It left a moment. I told Wyo about Greg. She said, "Manny, how good is this makeup? Would it pass in church? How bright are the lights?" "No brighter than here. Good job. You'll get by. But do you want to go to church? Nobody pushing." She thought. "It would please your mother, I mean, your senior wife, would it not?" I answered slowly. "Lyo, religion is your pigeon. But since you ask, yes, nothing would start you better in Davis family than going to church with Mom. I'll go if you do." "I'll go. I thought your last name was O'Kelly." "Is. Tack Davis on with hyphen if want to be formal. Davis is first husband, dead 50 years. Is family name, and all our wives are Gospaja Davis, hyphened, with every male name in Davis line plus her family name. In practice, Mom is only Gospaja Davis. Can call her that. And others use first name and add Davis if they write a check or something. Except that Ludmilla is Davis Davis, because proud of double membership, birth and option." "I see. Then if a man is John Davis, he's a son. But if he has some other last name, he's your co-husband. But a girl would be Jenny Davis either way, wouldn't she? How do I tell? By her age? No, that wouldn't help. I'm confused. And I thought clan marriages were complex. Or polyandries. Though mine wasn't. At least my husband's had the same last name." "No trouble. When you hear a woman about 40 address a 15-year-old as Mama Miller, you'll know which is wife and which is daughter. Not even that complex, as we don't have daughters home past husband high. They get opted. But might be visiting. Your husbands were named Nat?" "Oh, no. Fetasiv. Choi Lin and Choi Mu. I took back my born name." Out came Prof, cackled Sinelli. Looked even worse than earlier. We left by 3 exits, made rendezvous in main corridor, open formation. Wyo and I did not walk together, as I might be nabbed. On the other hand, she did not learn Lunar City, a warrant so complex even native-born get lost. So I led, and she had to keep me in sight. Prof trailed to make sure she didn't lose me. If I was picked up, Wyo would find public phone, report to Mike, then return to hotel and wait for Prof. But I felt sure that any yellow jacket who arrested me would get a caress from number 7 arm. No, ho-ho. Up to level 5 and cross town by Carver Causeway. Up to level 3 and stop at Tube Station West to pick up arms and toolkit. But not pea suit. Would not have been in character.
I stored it there. One yellow uniform at station showed no interest in me. South by well-lighted corridors until necessary to go outward to reach private easement Lock 13, to co-op pressure tunnels serving Davis tunnels and a dozen other farms. I suppose Prof dropped off there, but I never looked back. I delayed locking through our door until Wyo caught up. Lin Soon was saying, "Mom, allow me to present Wyma Beth Johnson." Mom took her in arms, kissed cheek, said, "So glad you could come. Why, my dear, our house is yours."
See why I love our old biddy?
Could have quick frosted Wyo with same words, but was real, and Wyo knew. Hadn't warned Wyo about switching names. Thought of it en route. Some of our kids were small, and while they grew up despising Warden, no sense in risking prattle about Wyoming Knot who's visiting us. That name was listed in Special File Zebra. So, I missed warning her. Was new to conspiracy. But Wyo cut cue and never bobbled. Greg was in preaching clothes and would have to leave in minutes. Mom did not hurry. Took Wyo down line of husbands. Grandpa, Greg, Hans, then up line of wives.
Ludmilla, Lenore, Sidrus, Anna,
with steadily grace. And then started on our kids. I said, "Mom, excuse me, want to change arms." Her eyebrows went up a millimeter, meaning, "We'll speak of this, but not in front of children." So I added, "No, it's late. Greg's sneaking look at watch, and Wyma and I are going to church. So excuse, please." She relaxed. "Certainly, dear." As she turned away, I saw her arm go around Wyo's waist. So I relaxed. I changed arms, replacing number 7 with social arm, but was excused to duck into phone cupboard and punch Mycroft XXX. "Mike, we're home, but about to go to church. Don't think you can listen there, so I'll check in later. Heard from Prof?"
"Not yet, man. Which church is it? I may have some circuit."
"Pillar of Fire, Repentance Tabernacle."
"No reference."
"Slow to my speed, pal. Meets in West 3 Community Hall. That's south of station on ring about number..."
"I have it. There's a pickup inside for channels and a phone in the corridor outside. I'll keep an ear on both."
"I don't expect trouble, Mike."
"It's what Professor said to do. He is reporting now. Do you wish to speak to him?"
"No time. Bye." That set pattern. Always keep in touch with Mike. Let him know where you are, where you plan to be. Mike would listen if he had nerve ends there. Discovery I made that morning, that Mike could listen at dead phone. Suggested it. Discovery bothered me. Don't believe in magic. But on thinking, I realized the phone could be switched on by central switching system without human intervention. If switching system had volition. Mike had Bolshevik volition. How Mike knew a phone was outside that hall is hard to say, since space could not mean to him what means to us. But he carried in storage a map, structure relations, of Luna City's engineering, and could almost always fit what we said to what he knew as Luna City. Hardly ever got lost. So from day Cabal started, we kept in touch with Mike and each other through his widespread nervous system. Won't mention it again unless necessary. Mom and Greg and Wyo were waiting at our door, Mom chomping but smiling. I saw she had lent Wyo a stole. Mom was as easy about skin as any loony, nothing new chummish, but church was another matter. We made it, although Greg went straight to platform and we to seats. I settled in warm, mindless state, going through motions. But Wyo did really listen to Greg's sermon, and either knew our hymn book or was accomplished sight reader. When we got home, young ones were in bed, and most adults. Hans and Sidrus were up, and Sidrus served cocosoy and cookies. Then all turned in. Mom assigned Wyo a room in tunnel most of our kids lived in, one which had had two smaller boys last time I noticed. Did not ask how she had reshuffled. Was clear she was giving my guest best we had.
or would have put Wyo with one of older girls. I slept with Mum that night, partly because our senior wife is good for nerves, and nerve-wracking things had happened, and partly so she would know I was not sneaking to Wyo's room after things were quiet. My workshop, where I slept when slept alone, was just one bend from Wyo's door. Mum was telling me, plain as print,
"Go ahead, dear. Don't tell me if you wish to be mean about it. Sneak behind my back."
Which neither of us admitted. We visited as we got ready for bed, chatted after light out. Then I turned over. Instead of saying good night, Mum said,
"Manuel, why does your sweet little guest make herself up as an afro? I would think that her natural coloration would be more becoming. Not that she isn't perfectly charming the way she chooses to be."
So, rolled over and faced her, and explained. Sounded thin, so filled in, and found self telling all, except one point. Mike. I included Mike, but not as computer. Instead, as a man Mom was not likely to meet, for security reasons. But telling Mom, taking her into my sub-cell, should say, to become leader of own cell in turn, taking Mom into conspiracy was not case of husband who can't keep from blurting everything to his wife. At most was hasty, but was best time if she was to be told. Mom was smart. Also able executive. Running big family without baring teeth requires that. Was respected among farm families and throughout Luna City. She had been up longer than 90%. She could help. And would be indispensable inside family. Without her help, Wyo and I would find it sticky to use phone together. Hard to explain. Keep kids from noticing. Impossible. But with Mom's help, would be no problems inside household. She listened. Sighed. Said,
"It sounds dangerous, dear."
"Is," I said. "Look, Mimi, if you don't want to tackle, say so, then forget what I've told."
"Manuel, don't even say that. You are my husband, dear. I took you for better, for worse. And your wish is my command."
My word. What a lie. But Mimi believed it.
"I would not let you go into danger alone," she went on. "And besides..."
"What, Mimi?"
"I think every loony dreams of the day when we will be free. All but some poor spineless rats. I've never talked about it. There seemed to be no point, and it's necessary to look up, not down, lift one's burden and go ahead. But I thank dear Bog that I have been permitted to live to see the time come, if indeed it has. Explain more about it. I am to find three others, is it? Three who can be trusted?"
"Don't hurry. Move slowly. Be sure."
"Sidrus can be trusted. She holds her tongue, that one."
"Don't think you should pick from family. Need to spread out. Don't rush."
"I shan't. We'll talk before I do anything. And Manuel, if you want my opinion..."
She stopped. "Always want your opinion, Mimi."
"Don't mention this to Grandpa. He's forgetful these days and sometimes talkative. Now sleep, dear. And don't dream."
9. Followed a long time during which would have been possible to forget anything as unlikely as revolution had not the tales taken so much time. Our first purpose was not to be noticed. Long-distance purpose was to make things as much worse as possible. Yes, worse. Never was a time, even at last, when all loonies wanted to throw off authority, wanted it bad enough to revolt. All loonies despised Warden and cheated authority. Didn't mean they were ready to fight and die. If you had mentioned patriotism to a loony, he would have stared, or thought you were talking about his homeland. Were transported Frenchmen whose hearts belonged to La Belle Patrie, ex-Germans loyal to Vaterland, Ruskies who still loved Holy Mother Russia. But Luna? Luna was the rock, place of exile, not thing to love. We were as non-political a people as history ever produced. I know,
I was as numb to politics as any until circumstances pitched me into it.
Wyoming was in it because she hated authority for a personal reason. Prof, because he despised all authority in a detached, intellectual fashion. Mike, because he was a bored and lonely machine and was for him only game in town. You could not have accused us of patriotism. I came closest because I was third generation with total lack of affection for any place on Terra. Had been there, disliked it, and despised earthworms. Made me more patriotic than most. Average Looney was interested in beer, betting, women, and work, in that order. Women might be second place, but first was unlikely, much as women were cherished. Looney's had learned there never were enough women to go around. Slow learners died, as even most possessive male can't stay alert every minute. As Prof says, a society adapts to fact, or doesn't survive. Looney's adapted to harsh facts, or failed and died. But patriotism was not necessary to survival. Like old Cheney's saying that fish aren't aware of water, I was not aware of any of this until I first went to Terra, and even then did not realize what a blank spot was in Looney's under storage location marked patriotism, until I took part in the effort to stir them up. Wyo and her comrades had tried to push patriotism button, and got nowhere. Years of work, a few thousand members, less than 1% of that microscopic number, almost 10%, had been paid spies of Boss Fink. Prof set us straight. Easier to get people to hate than to get them to love. Luckily, Security Chief Alvarez gave us a hand. Those 9 dead Finks were replaced with 90, for authority was gulled into something it did reluctantly, namely, spend money on us. And one folly led to another. Warden's bodyguard had never been large even in earliest days. Prison guards in historical meaning were unnecessary, and that had been one attraction of penal colony system. Cheap. Warden and his deputy had to be protected, and visiting VIPs. But prison itself needed no guards. They even stopped guarding ships after it became clear was not necessary. And in May 2075, bodyguard was down to its cheapest numbers. All of them new chum transportees. But loss of 9 in one night scared somebody. We knew it scared Alvarez. He filed copies of his demands for help in Zebra file, and Mike read them. A lag who had been a police officer on Terra before his conviction, and then a bodyguard all his years in Luna. Alvarez was probably most frightened and loneliest man in the Rock. He demanded more and tougher help, threatened to resign civil service job if he didn't get it. Just a threat, which authority would have known if it had really known Luna. If Alvarez had shown up in any Warren as unarmed civilian, he would have stayed breathing only as long as not recognized. He got his additional guards. We never found out who ordered that raid. Mort the Wart had never shown such tendencies, had been King Log throughout tenure. Perhaps Alvarez, having only recently succeeded to Boss Fink Spot, wanted to make face, may have had ambition to be warden. But likeliest theory is that Warden's report on subversive activities caused Authority Earthside to order a cleanup. One thumb-fingered mistake led to another. New bodyguards, instead of picking from new transportees, were elite convict troops, Federated Nations, crack, peace dragoons. Were mean and tough, did not want to go to Luna, and soon realized that temporary police duty was a one-way trip. Hated Luna and Loonies, and saw us as cause of it all. Once Alvarez got them, he posted a 24-hour watch at every inter-Warren tube station and instituted passports and passport control. Would have been illegal had there been laws in Luna, since 95% of us were theoretically free, either born free or sentence completed. Percentage was higher in cities, as undischarged transportees lived in barrack warrens, a complex, and came into town only 2 days per lunar they had off work. If then, as they had no money. But sometimes saw them wandering around, hoping somebody would buy a drink.
but passport system was not illegal, as warden's regulations were only written law. Was announced in papers. We were given week to get passports. And at 800 one morning was put in effect. Some loonies hardly ever traveled. Some traveled on business. Some commuted from outlying warrens, or even from Luna City to Novalin, or other way. Good little boys filled out applications. Paid fees, were photographed, got passes. I was good little boy on Proof's advice. Paid for passport, and added it to pass I carried to work in complex. Few good little boys. Loonies did not believe it. Passports? Who ever heard of such a thing? Was a trooper in Tube Station South that morning dressed in bodyguard yellow rather than regimentals, and looked like he hated it and us. I was not going anywhere. I hung back and watched. Novalin capsule was announced. Crowd of 30-odd headed for gate. Gospodin Yellowjacket demanded passport the first to reach it. Loney stopped to argue. Second one pushed past. Guard turned and yelled. Three or four more shoved past. Guard reached for sidearm. Somebody grabbed his elbow. Gun went off. Not a laser, a slug gun. Noisy. Slug hit decking and went whee, whee, whoo, off somewhere. I faded back. One man hurt, that guard. When first press of passengers had gone down ramp, he was on deck, not moving. Nobody paid attention. They walked around or stepped over, except one woman carrying a baby, who stopped, kicked him carefully in face, then went down ramp. He may have been dead already. Didn't wait to see. Understand bodies stayed there till relief arrived. Next day was a half squad in that spot. Capsule for Novalin left empty. It settled down. Those who had to travel got passports. Diehards quit traveling. Guard at a tube gate became two men. One looked at passports, while others stood back, with gun drawn. One who checked passports did not try hard, which was well, as most were counterfeit and early ones were crude. But before long, authentic paper was stolen and counterfeits were as dinkum as official ones. More expensive, but loonies preferred free enterprise passports. Our organization did not make counterfeits. We merely encouraged it. And knew who had them and who did not. Mike's records listed officially issued ones. This helped separate sheep from goats in files we were building. Also stored in Mike, but in Bastille location. As we figured a man with counterfeit passport was halfway to joining us. Word was passed down cells in our growing organization never to recruit anybody with a valid passport. If recruiter was not certain, just query upwards, and answer came back. What guard's troubles were not over. Does not help a guard's dignity, nor add to peace of mind to have children stand in front of him, or behind, out of eye, which was worse, and ape every move he makes, or run back and forth screaming obscenities, jeering, making finger motions that are universal. At least guards took them as insults. One guard backhanded a small boy, cost him some teeth. Result? Two guards dead, one loony dead. After that, guards ignored children. We didn't have to work this up, we merely encouraged it. You wouldn't think that a sweet old lady like my senior wife would encourage children to misbehave, but she did. Other things get single men a long way from home upset. And one we did start. These peace dragoons had been sent to the Rock without a comfort detachment. Some of our femmes were extremely beautiful, and some started loitering around stations, dressed in less than usual, which could approach zero, and wearing more than usual amount of perfume, scents with range and striking power. They did not speak to Yellow Jackets nor look at them. They simply crossed their line of sight, undulating as only a loony gal can. A female on Terra can't walk that way. She's tied down by six times too much weight. Such, of course, produces a male gallery, from men down to lads not yet pubescent. Happy whistles and cheers for her beauty. Nasty laughs at Yellow Boy. First girls to take this duty were slot machine types, but volunteers sprang up so fast that Prof decided we need not spend money. He was correct.
Even Ludmilla, shy as a kitten, wanted to try it, and did not only because Mom told her not to. But Lenore, 10 years older and prettiest of our family, did try it, and Mom did not scold. She came back pink and excited and pleased with herself, and anxious to tease Enemy again. Her own idea. Lenore did not then know that revolution was brewing. During this time I rarely saw Prof, and never in public. We kept touch by phone. At first a bottleneck was that our farm had just one phone for 25 people, many of them youngsters who would tie up a phone for hours unless coerced. Mimi was strict. Our kids were allowed one outgoing call per day, and max of 90 seconds on a call, with rising scale of punishment, tempered by her warmth in granting exceptions. But grants were accompanied by Mum's phone lecture.
When I first came to Luna, there were no private phones. You children don't know how soft.
We were one of last prosperous families to install a phone. It was new in household when I was opted. We were prosperous because we never bought anything farm could not produce. Mum disliked phone because rates at Luna City Co-op Comm Company were passed on in large measure to authority. She never could understand why I could not,
since you know all about such things, Manuel dear,
steal phone service as easily as we liberated power. That a phone instrument was part of a switching system into which it must fit was no interest to her. Steal it, I did, eventually. Problem with illicit phone is how to receive incoming calls. Since phone is not listed, even if you tell persons from whom you want calls, switching system itself does not have you listed. Is no signal that can tell it to connect other party with you. Once Mike joined conspiracy, switching was no problem. I had in workshop most of what I needed, bought some items and liberated others. Drilled a tiny hole from workshop to phone cupboard and another to Wyo's room. Virgin rock a meter thick, but a laser drill collimated to a thin pencil cuts rapidly. I unshipped listed phone, made a wireless coupling to line in its recess and concealed it. All else needed were binaural receptors and a speaker in Wyo's room, concealed, and same in mine, and a circuit to raise frequency above audio to have silence on Davis' phone line, and its converse to restore audio incoming. Only problem was to do this without being seen, and Mum generaled that. All else was Mike's problem. Used no switching arrangements. From then on, used Mycroft XXX, only when calling from some other phone. Mike listened at all times in workshop and in Wyo's room. If he heard my voice or her say, "Mike," he answered, but not to other voices. Voice patterns were as distinctive to him as fingerprints. He never made mistakes. Minor flourishes. Soundproofing Wyo's door such as workshop door already had. Switching to suppress my instrument or hers. Signals to tell me she was alone in her room and door locked. And vice versa. All added up to safe means whereby Wyo and I could talk with Mike or with each other. Or could set up talk-talk of Mike, Wyo, Prof, and self. Mike would call Prof wherever he was. Prof would talk or call back from a more private phone. Or might be Wyo or myself had to be found. We all were careful to stay checked in with Mike. My bootleg phone, though it had no way to punch a call, could be used to call any number in Luna. Speak to Mike. Ask for a Sherlock to anybody. Not tell him number. Mike had all listings and could look up a number faster than I could. We were beginning to see unlimited possibilities in a phone switching system, alive and on our side. I got from Mike and gave Mom still another null number to call Mike if she needed to reach me. She grew chummy with Mike while continuing to think he was a man. This spread throughout our family. One day as I returned home, Sidra said, "Manny, darling, your friend with the nice voice called, Mike Holmes, wants you to call back." "Thanks, hon. Will."
"When are you going to invite him to dinner, man? I think he's nice."
I told her Gospodin Holmes had bad breath, was covered with rank hair, and hated women. She used a rude word, Mom not being an earshot.
You're afraid to let me see him. Afraid I'll opt out for him.
I patted her and told her that was why. I told Mike and Prof about it. Mike flirted even more with my womenfolk after that. Prof was thoughtful. I began to learn techniques of conspiracy, and to appreciate Prof's feeling that revolution could be an art. Did not forget, nor ever doubt, Mike's prediction that Luna was only 7 years from disaster. But did not think about it. Thought about fascinating, finicky details. Prof had emphasized that stickiest problems in conspiracy are communications and security, and had pointed out that they conflict. Easier are communications, greater is risk to security. If security is tight, organization can be paralyzed by safety precautions. He had explained that cell system was a compromise. I accepted cell system, since it was necessary to limit losses from spies. Even Wyo admitted that organization without compartmentation could not work after she learned how rotten with spies old underground had been. But I did not like clogged communications of cell system. Like Terran dinosaurs of old, took too long to send message from head to tail or back. So talked with Mike. We discarded many linked channels, I had suggested to Prof. We retained cells but based security and communication on marvelous possibilities of our dinkum thinkum. Communications. We set up a ternary tree of party names. Chairman, Gospodin Adam Selin, Mike. Executive cell, Bork, me. Betty, Wyo. Bill, Prof. Bork's cell, Cassie, Mum. Colin, Chang. Betty's cell, Calvin, Greg. Cecilia, Sidris. Clayton. Bill's cell, Cornwall, Finn Nielsen, Carolyn, Cotter, and so on. At seventh link, George supervises Herbert, Henry, and Hallie. By time you reach that level, you need 2,187 names with H. But turn it over to savvy computer who finds or invents them. Each recruit is given a party name and an emergency phone number. This number, instead of chasing through many links, connects with Adam Selin. Mike. Security. Based on double principle. No human being can be trusted with anything. But Mike could be trusted with everything. Grim first half is beyond dispute. With drugs and other unsavory methods, any man can be broken. Only defense is suicide, which may be impossible. Oh, our Harlow tooth methods, classic and novel, some nearly infallible. Prof saw to it that Wyo and myself were equipped. Never knew what he gave her as a final friend, and since I never had to use mine, is no point in messy details. Nor am I sure I would ever suicide. Am not stuff of martyrs. But Mike could never need to suicide. Could not be drugged. Did not feel pain. He carried everything concerning us in a separate memory bank under a locked signal programmed only to our three voices. And, since flesh is weak, we added a signal under which any of us could lock out other two in emergency. In my opinion, as best computer man in Luna, Mike could not remove this lock once it was set up. Best of all, nobody would ask Master Computer for this file because nobody knew it existed. Did not suspect Mike as Mike existed. How secure can you be, huh? Only risk was that this awakened machine was whimsical. Mike was always showing unforeseen potentials. Conceivable, he could figure out a way to get around block. If he wanted to. But would never want to. He was loyal to me. First and oldest friend. He liked Prof. I think he loved Wyo. No. Sex meant nothing. But Wyo is lovable, and they hit it off from start. I trusted Mike. In this life, you have to bet. On that bet, I would give any odds. So, we based security on trusting Mike with everything while each of us knew only what he had to know. Take that tree of names and numbers. I knew only party names of my cellmates, and of three directly under me. Was all I needed. Mike set up party names, assigned phone number to each, kept a roster of real names versus party names.
Let's say party member Daniel, whom I would not know, being a D two levels below me, recruits Fritz Schultz.
Daniel reports fact, but not name upwards. Adam Selim calls Daniel, assigns for Schultz party name Embrook. Then phones Schultz at number received from Daniel. Gives Schultz his name, Embrook, an emergency phone number, this number being different for each recruit. Not even Embrook's cell leader would know Embrook's emergency number. What you do not know, you cannot spill. Not under drugs, nor torture, nor anything. Not even from carelessness. Now, let's suppose I need to reach Comrade Embrook. I don't know who he is. He may live in Hong Kong or be a shopkeeper nearest my home. Instead of passing message down, hoping it will reach him, I call Mike. Mike connects me with Embrook at once, in a Sherlock, without giving me his number. Or suppose I need to speak to Comrade who is preparing cartoon we are about to distribute in every tap room in Luna. I don't know who he is, but I need to talk to him. Something has come up. I call Mike. Mike knows everything, and again I am quickly connected. And this comrade knows it's okay, as Adam Selim arranged call. Comrade Bork speaking, and he doesn't know me, but initial B tells him that I am VIP indeed. We have to change so-and-so. Tell your cell leader and have him check, but get on with it. Minor flourishes. Some comrades did not have phones. Some could be reached only at certain hours. Some outlying wards did not have phone service. No matter. Mike knew everything, and the rest of us did not know anything that could endanger any but that handful whom each knew face to face. After we decided that Mike should talk voice to voice to any comrade under some circumstances, it was necessary to give him more voices and dress him up, make him three dimensions, create Adam Selim, chairman of the Provisional Committee of Free Luna. Mike's need for more voices lay, in fact, that he had just one vocoder, whereas his brain could handle a dozen conversations, or 100, don't know how many, like a chess master playing 50 opponents, only more so. This would cause a bottleneck as organization grew and Adam Selim was phoned oftener, and could be crucial if we lasted long enough to go into action. Besides giving him more voices, I wanted to silence one he had. One of those so-called computer men might walk into Machine's room while we were phoning Mike, bound to cause even his dim wit to wonder if he found Master Machine apparently talking to itself. Vocoder is a very old device. Human voice is buzzes and hisses, mixed various ways, true even of a coloratura soprano. A vocoder analyzes buzzes and hisses into patterns. One, a computer, or trained eye, can read. A vocoder is a little box which can buzz and hiss and has controls to vary these elements to match those patterns. A human can play a vocoder, producing artificial speech. A properly programmed computer can do it as fast, as easily, as clearly as you can speak. But voices on a phone wire are not sound waves, but electrical signals. Mike did not need audio part of vocoder to talk by phone. Sound waves were needed only by human at other end. No need for speech sounds inside Mike's room at Authority Complex. So I planned to remove them, and thereby any danger that somebody might notice. First, I worked at home, using number 3 arm most of time. Result was very small box, which sandwiched 20 vocoder circuits minus audio side. Then I called Mike and told him to get ill in way that would annoy a warden. Then I waited. We had done this get-ill trick before. I went back to work once I learned that I was clear, which was Thursday, that same week when Alvarez read into Zebra File an account of shambles at Stiliagi Hall. His version listed about 100 people, out of perhaps 300. List included Shorty McCrum, Wyo, Prof, and Finn Nielsen, but not me. Apparently I was missed by his Sphinx. It told how 9 police officers, each deputized by warden to preserve peace, had been shot down in cold blood, also named 3 of our dead.
An add-on a week later stated that the notorious Agent Provocateur, Wyoming Nat of Hong Kong in Luna, whose incendiary speech on Monday, 13th May, had incited the riot that cost the lives of 9 brave officers, had not been apprehended in Luna City, and had not returned to her usual haunts in Hong Kong in Luna, and was now believed to have died in the massacre she herself set off. This add-on admitted what earlier report failed to mention, i.e., bodies were missing, an exact number of dead was not known. This P.S. settled 2 things. Wyo could not go home, nor back to being a blonde. Since I had not been spotted, I resumed my public ways, took care of customers that week, bookkeeping machines and retrieval files at Carnegie Library, and spent time having Mike read out Zebra File and other special files, doing so in room L of Raffles, as I did not yet have my own phone. During that week, Mike niggled at me like an impatient child, which he was, wanting to know when I was coming over to pick up more jokes. Failing that, he wanted to tell them by phone. I got annoyed, and had to remind myself that from Mike's viewpoint, analyzing jokes was just as important as freeing Luna, and you don't break promises to a child. Besides that, I got itchy wondering whether I could go inside Complex without being nabbed. We knew Prof was not clear, was sleeping in Raffles on that account. Yet they knew he had been at meeting, and knew where he was, daily. But no attempt was made to pick him up. When we learned that attempt had been made to pick up Wyo, I grew itchier. Was I clear? Or were they waiting to nab me, quietly? Had to know. So I called Mike and told him to have a tummy ache. He did so. I was called in. No trouble. Aside from showing passport at station, then to a new guard at Complex, all was usual. I chatted with Mike, picked up 1,000 jokes, with understanding that we would report 100 at a time every 3 or 4 days, no faster. Told him to get well, and went back to L City, stopping on way out to bill chief engineer for working time, travel and tool time, materials, special service, anything I could load in. Thereafter, saw Mike about once a month. Was safe. Never went there except when they called me for malfunction beyond the ability of their staff. And I was always able to repair it. Sometimes quickly. Sometimes after a full day and many tests. Was careful to leave tool marks on cover plates. And had before and after printouts of tests run to show what had been wrong. How I analyzed it. What I had done. Mike always worked perfectly after one of my visits. I was indispensable. So, after I prepared his new voter vocoder add-on, didn't hesitate to tell him to get ill. Call came in 30 minutes. Mike had thought up a dandy. His illness was wild oscillations in conditioning warden's residence. He was running its heat up, then down, on an 11-minute cycle, while oscillating its air pressure on a short cycle, CA 2 cycles per second, enough to make a man dreadfully nervy, and perhaps cause earache. Conditioning a single residence should not go through a master computer. In Davis tunnels, we handle home and farm with idiot controls, feedbacks for each cubic, with alarms so that somebody could climb out of bed and control by hand until trouble could be found. If cows got chilly, did not hurt corn. If lights failed over wheat, vegetables were okay. That Mike could raise hell with warden's residence and nobody could figure out what to do shows silliness of piling everything into one computer. Mike was happy, joyed. This was humor he really scanned. I enjoyed it too. Told him to go ahead, have fun, spread out tools. Got out little black box. A computer man of the watch comes banging and ringing at door. I took my time answering and carried number 5 arm in right hand with short wing bare. This makes some people sick and upsets almost everybody. What in hell do you want, chum? I inquired. Listen, he says. Warden is raising hell. Haven't you found trouble? My compliments to Warden and tell him I will override by hand to restore his precious comfort as soon as I locate faulty circuit. If not slowed up by silly questions,
Are you going to stand with door open, blowing dust into machines while I have cover plates off? If you do, since you are in charge, when dust puts machines on sputter, you can repair it. I won't leave a warm bed to help. You can tell that to your bloody warden, too.
Watch your language, cobber.
What's yours, convict? Are you going to close that door, or shall I walk out and go back to El City? And raise number 5 like a club. He closed door. Had no interest in insulting poor sod. Was one small bit of policy to make everybody as unhappy as possible. He was finding working for warden difficult. I wanted to make it unbearable.
Shall I step it up?
Mike inquired. Hold it so for 10 minutes, then stop abruptly. Then jog it for an hour, say, with air pressure. Erratic but hard. Know what a sonic boom is?
Certainly. It is a...
Don't define. After you drop major effect, rattle his air ducts every few minutes with nearest to a boom system will produce. Then give him something to remember. Mike, can you make his WC run backwards?
I surely can. All of them?
How many does he have?
6.
Well, program to give them all a push, enough to soak his rugs. But if you can spot one nearest his bedroom, fountain it clear to ceiling. Can?
Program set up.
Good. Now for your present, ducky. There was room in voter audio box to hide it, and I spent 40 minutes with number 3, getting it just so.
We trial checked it through voter vocoder. Then I told him to call Wyo and check each circuit.
For 10 minutes was silence, which I spent putting tool marks on a cover plate, which should have been removed had anything been wrong. Putting tools away, putting number 6 arm on, rolling up 1,000 jokes, waiting in printout. I had found no need to cut off audio of voter. Mike had thought of it before I had, and always chopped off any time door was touched. Since his reflexes were better than mine by a factor of at least 1,000, I forgot it. At last he said,
"All 20 circuits are okay. I can switch circuits in the middle of a word, and Wyo can't detect discontinuity. And I call Prof and said hello, and talk to Mom on your home phone. All 3 at the same time."
"We're in business. What excuse you give Mom?"
"I asked her to have you call me, Adam Celine, that is. Then we chatted. She's a charming conversationalist. We discussed Greg's sermon of last Tuesday."
"Huh? How?"
"I told her I had listened to it, man, and quoted a poetic part."
"Oh, Mike."
"It's okay, man. I let her think I sat in back, then slipped out during the closing hymn. She's not nosy. She knows that I don't want to be seen."
"Mom is nosiest female in Luna. Guess it's okay. But don't do it again. Do it again. You go to... You monitor meetings and lectures and concerts and stuff."
"Unless some busybody switches me off by hand. Man, I can't control those spot pickups the way I do a phone."
"The simplest switch. Brute muscle rather than solid-state flip-flop."
"That's barbaric and unfair."
"Mike, almost everything is unfair. What can't be cured
must be endured. That's a funny once, man."
"Sorry, let's change it. What can't be cured should be tossed out and something better put in. Which will do. What chances last time you calculated?"
"Approximately 1 in 9, man."
"Getting worse?"
"Man, they'll get worse for months. We haven't reached the crisis."
"With the Yankees in cellar, too. Oh, well. Back to other matter. From now on, when you talk to anyone, if he's been to a lecture or whatever, you were there too, and prove it by recalling something."
"Noted. Why, man?"
"Have you read The Scarlet Pimpernel? Maybe in public library."
"Yes. Shall I read it back?"
No. You're our Scarlet Pimpernel, our John Galt, our Swamp Fox, our man of mystery. You go everywhere, know everything,
slip in and out of town without passport. You're always there, yet nobody catches sight of you.
His lance rippled. He gave a subdued chuckle.
That's funny, man. Funny once, funny twice, maybe funny always.
Funny always. How long ago did you stop Gymkhana at Wharton's?
43 minutes ago, except erratic booms.
Bet his teeth ache. Give him 15 minutes more, then I'll report job completed.
Noted. Wyo sent you a message, man. She said to remind you of Billy's birthday party.
Oh, my word. Stop everything. I'm leaving. Bye.
I hurried out.
Billy's mother is Anna. Probably her last. And right well she's done by us. 8 kids. 3 still home. I tried to be as careful as Mum never to show favoritism. But Billy is quite a boy, and I taught him to read. Possible he looks like me.
Stopped at chief engineer's office to leave Bill and demand to see him. Was let in and he was in belligerent mood. Wharton had been riding him.
Hold it, I told him. My son's birthday, and shan't be late, but must show you something.
Took an envelope from Kit, dumped item on desk. Corpse of housefly, which I charred with a hot wire and fetched.
We do not tolerate flies in Davis tunnels, but sometimes one wanders in from city as locks are opened.
This wound up in my workshop just when I needed it.
See that? Guess where I found it.
On that faked evidence, I built a lecture on care of fine machines. Talked about doors opened. Complained about man on watch.
Dust can ruin a computer. Insects are unpardonable. Yet our watchstanders wander in and out as if tube station. Today both doors held open, while this idiot yammered. If I find more evidence that cover plates have been removed by hoof-handed chum who attracts flies, well, it's your plan, Chief.
Got more than I can handle. Been doing your chores because I like fine machines. Can't stand to see them abused. Goodbye.
Hold on. I want to tell you something.
Sorry, got to go. Take it or leave it. I'm no vermin exterminator. I'm a computer man.
Nothing frustrates a man so much as not letting him get in his say. With luck and help from Wharton, chief engineer would have ulcers by Christmas.
Was late anyhow, and made humble apology to Billy. Alvarez had thought up new wrinkle. Close search on leaving complex. I endured it with never a nasty word for Dorgruns who searched me. Wanted to get home. But those 1,000 jokes bothered them.
What's this?
One demanded.
Computer paper, I said. Test runs.
His mate joined him. Don't think they could read. They wanted to confiscate, so I demanded they call chief engineer. They let me go. I felt not displeased. More and more such, and guards were daily more hated. Decision to make Mike more a person rose from need to have any party member phone him on occasion. My advice about concerts and plays was simply a side effect. Mike's voice over phone had odd quality I had not noticed during time I had visited him only at complex. When you speak to a man by phone, there is background noise, and you hear him breathe, hear heartbeats, body motion, even though rarely conscious of these. Besides that, even if he speaks under a hush hood, noises get through, enough to fill space, make him a body with surroundings. With Mike was none of this. By then, Mike's voice was human in timbre and quality, recognizable. He was baritone, had North American accent with Aussie overtones. As Michelle, she, had a light soprano with French flavor. Mike's personality grew also. When first I introduced him to Wyo and Prof, he sounded like a pedantic child. In short weeks, he flowered, until I visualized a man about my own age. His voice, when he first woke, was blurred and harsh, hardly understandable. Now it was clear, and choice of words and phrasing was consistent. Colloquial to me, scholarly to Prof, gallant to Wyo. Variation one expects of mature adults. But background was dead. Thick silence. So we filled it. Mike needed only hints.
He did not make his breathing noisy. Ordinarily, you would not notice. But he would stick in touches. "Sorry, Manny. You caught me bathing when the phone sounded." And let one hear hurried breathing. Or, "I was eating. I had to swallow." He used such even on me, once he undertook to be a human body. We all put Adam Selin together, talking it over at Raffles. How old he was, what did he look like, married, where did he live, what work, what interests. We decided that Adam was about 40, healthy, vigorous, well-educated, interested in all arts and sciences, and very well grounded in history. A match chess player, but little time to play. He was married in communist type, a troika in which he was senior husband, 4 children. Wife and junior husband not in politics, so far as we knew. He was ruggedly handsome, with wavy iron-gray hair, and was mixed race. Second generation one side, third on other. Was wealthy by Looney standards, with interest in Novelin and Kongville, as well as El City. He kept offices in Luna City, outer office with a dozen people, plus private office staffed by male deputy and female secretary. Why I wanted to know was he bundling with secretary. I told her to switch off, was private. Lyo said indignantly that she was not being snoopy. Weren't we trying to create a rounded character? We decided that offices were in Old Dome, third ramp, south side, heart of financial district. If you know El City, you recall that in Old Dome some offices have windows since they can look out over floors of Dome. I wanted this for sound effects. We drew a floor plan, and had that office existed, it would have been between Etna Luna and Greenberg and Company.
This book is continued on Disc 5.